Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Welcome to Locked On Eagles, your daily source for the best Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Breaking Football, and you can find me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. I'm here with my co-host, Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NTT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
Oh, life is a dream, Mike. Thanks for asking. One more preseason game down means we are one preseason game closer to the regular season, and that's all that matters to me. How are you feeling?
Doing fantastic, sitting here drinking my adult beverage with some apple juice because I ran out of real mixers. But
that's how you know he's a father. It's the adult beverage plus the apple juice.
It's the only thing I had in the house. I ran out of all the regular mixers, and I figured let me take some of this apple juice from the kids. They won't mind. So look, we got the W on this one, 38-31. Is that correct? Because we're recording right after the game and looking up stats and everything.
Yes,
like that.
Sir. Dane Evans, future QB3 of the Philadelphia Eagles, kneeled the game home. Excellent work.
Let's get right into it, man. Carson Wentz, 6-for-10, 129 yards, 2 touchdowns, and one fluke interception. How did you feel about Carson Wentz's performance?
Probably not as good as everybody wants me to feel. Definitely still good. And a lot of it is just, you know, nitpicky sort of stuff. Obviously, he got the job done. I mean, the throw to Torrey Smith, the 50-yard touchdown, I think it was. Nice anticipation. Obviously, a bit of a blown coverage there from Miami. The ball came out weird on that. It did not look pretty. And I know I wanted to see him take a deep shot. He took a deep shot and it was a touchdown. So again, you know, who am I to complain? The ball definitely came out funky, but he climbed the pocket nice. He went through his reads. It was pretty. The Jeffrey touchdown was actually a really nice play. You've seen now through the preseason, they've worked a few more of these RPO-ish sort of concepts. They're not even really RPO, but we've seen a couple of plays now where Wentz, you know, immediately off the snap, you know, opens up to one side, either fakes, like, you know, the bubble screen, fakes the swing pass, fakes something, and then hits the slant that comes in, you know, right behind that linebacker that had to replace, which is a nice concept for Wentz's strengths. You know, he has the ability to really fit the ball in tight windows, and that Jeffrey pass was a good example of what a play that can be devastating, especially in the red zone when defenders tend to overreact to misdirection a little bit more because they have to close quicker. But you'll notice that Wentz, his footwork, I didn't think was as good as it has been in previous preseason games, especially because he experienced a ton of pressure tonight. And he had a perfect passer rating, 158.3, when he wasn't pressured. I think it was 4-for-4. And on every other dropback, the other 6 where he was pressured, you know, that was when he had the INT, you know, so on and so forth, and it wasn't as pretty. And you definitely saw him revert to some of his, like, you know, more backyard mechanics when he does that. Now, for some of those, like that one pass to Ertz, right, you can understand why. He got, like, tripped by his own offensive lineman. But you can tell that when he, once the pocket breaks down, he's just kind of doing his own thing, and he can strong arm a lot of stuff. His feet can get frozen in the mud. And, you know, that's that, like, again, if he's getting the job done, I'm not going to complain. I think I'm pretty sure I tweeted saying, you know, he might not be the most accurate quarterback, but ball placement was really impressive in that we saw all those diving passes that folks had to make. You know, Jeffrey was diving here, you know, Ertz is adjusting to the football. They aren't super accurate, but the ball placement at least is nice because they were all to space. They were all away from defenders, right. And that's the positive thing. That distinction between ball placement and accuracy is very, very it's splitting of a hair, but it's very important. And we saw that Wentz made good decisions with the football in that regard.
And he had to step up on the one throw in the pocket when he threw to Torrey Smith, and it did come out a bit weird. It kind of looked like Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State,
right,
with the rainbow ball. But, you know, it was a muddy pocket, so I'll forgive him on that one. Like you said, I did think he did a good job of keeping the ball away from the defenders, except for on the one interception that was picked by Akeem Spence, was it, or Akeem Hicks?
Why do you do this to me, Michael? Why? I'm just, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sit here peacefully, quietly, and the moment you make a mistake, which is coming, man, we do this 5 times a week, the moment you make a mistake, I will come down with the unholy fury of the Lord, and you will never forget it. You will rue the day, Michael, rue. I said rue on the podcast.
So it was Willie Hayes that got the tip that led to the lone Carson Wentz interception. I know Ben was taking extra note of that. If you listened to the podcast yesterday, you'll know why. If you haven't, go back and take a listen. Ben is the reason we had to create a corrections and omissions section on this show. And we're gonna
enjoying myself right now.
All right, so we're going to move on to Ronald Darby, who had a bit of an up-and-down performance, almost had his hands on an interception early in the game, and then a beautiful pass down the field to Devontae Parker that he was unable to break up, got baited into a double move by Kenny Stills down the field. Very nice recovery speed on that play. Tried to make a play on the ball, was a bit late, and just by happenstance was, you know, flagged with a defensive pass interference call. So up and down day for Darby. I was talking with Eric Turner from the Locked On Bills podcast on Twitter throughout the game about Darby, and he was saying that those were some of the same issues, the issues on double moves, the issues with the ball in the air that he showed while he was in Buffalo last year. What were your thoughts on Darby's performance?
Yeah, I just wrote that piece on Pumphrey saying don't react to preseason games, don't overreact. So I'm not really going to overreact. I've loved Darby since he came out of Florida State. I've loved the tape that he's put out in the NFL, and I've seen him play like this, play aggressive, you know, attack double moves, and I've seen him, you know, recover with speed and close back down. I've seen him get burned over the top before. It's nothing particularly new to me. You know, the Devontae Parker, the offense is allowed to make good plays. You know, like that happens to the best of them. And it was a fantastic play. The ball was exactly where it needed to be, and Devontae Parker went up and got it the way that he should have. It was a good play. The Kenny Stills play, I thought Darby played it very, very well. You know, reacting, the little hesitation move by Stills was nice. Darby reacted to it and then closed back down.
Stills, I don't think it was a penalty.
It was ticky-tack for sure. And the funny thing about it is, if Stills adjusts properly to a ball that was behind him in the sense that it was, you know, over the opposite shoulder, right? He needed to kind of backpedal in order to get to it. If mm-hmm. he tracks and adjusts that ball properly, it's not as bad a pass interference as it was. It's because Darby arrived in front of Kenny Stills when the ball was behind him that Darby ended up taking out a guy that, you know, wasn't going to make the catch. And that looks a lot worse than if the ball arrived, you know, where Kenny Stills' arms were.
Right.
Either way,
yeah.
Like, this is, you know, we're splitting hairs again at this point. The fact of the matter is, Darby is a good corner, and he played well, and the offense also had good plays, and that's it.
He is still worth the value that we traded for him.
Unquestionably. Unquestionably.
As a result of that, you know, we have been blitzing more, as we've been talking about on this show. And Michael Kendricks, the narrative around him has gone from trade him to trade him now to, oh, wait, we're going to blitz? Trade him? ? Mm-hmm. And now it's looking like, you know, we might have a guy that can get a decent amount of snaps and really flash on this defense. Are you buying on Kendricks or are you still selling?
I'm selling if I get a good offer. It's a question of the offer. You know, he's definitely a piece that you can move, because he is more talented than this system is going to allow him to produce, and he could be of value to another team elsewhere. That being said, yeah, Kendricks is playing like a man with a purpose. And if that purpose is, I got to put out good tape so I can get the heck out of Philadelphia, okay. You know, the trade deadline isn't for a couple of months, so hopefully he'll continue with that fire. If the purpose is, Jim Schwartz is opening up the defense and I get to do something that, you know, at which I have a talent, you know, something that's positive for me, I should make sure that I produce now, then cool. You know what I mean? I don't really need to question the motivation. I'm selling on Kendricks if the price is right, the same way that Howie Roseman would sell his mother if the price is right. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to question the production. It's really funny that he has 3 interceptions in 3 preseason games, and at least 2 of them have been he was just standing at the right place. That's really funny to me, because it's the classic example of just something happens during the preseason, let's massively overreact to it without even taking a moment to think about the actual like tape and game that went into it. But still, yeah. Sell on Kendricks if you can. If not, he's playing better, and I'm not going to ask questions.
All right, so it was our first game with no Derek Barnett sack. Is he a bust? Ben, go.
I mean, absolutely. As we've discussed on this entire podcast, overreact to all preseason games. Now, I'm curious to hear your thoughts about Barnett, because you're so much more well-versed in he than I am. If you haven't seen Mike's Twitter thread on Derek Barnett, it's massive and excruciatingly intensive, and the exact sort of analysis that should be done on players, you know, if you have the time and the courage, I think. But either way,
yeah.
No, I think, you know, from my perspective, I saw from Barnett work on the things on which we wanted to see work, and different varieties of attack and the relentless motor that we love. He was just up against stiffer competition from what I can see. Didn't produce as well. There was the one on the Curry strip sack. you know, Cutler couldn't shift right away from Curry because Barnett was right there pushing Juwan James back into the pocket, which was good. But I'm curious to hear what you saw from Barnett's performance, given that he wasn't as box score productive as we've seen him be in the previous two games.
Yeah, and I thought it was totally fine because, like you said, he was working on different things, and that's what I want to see from him. I know he can hit the dip and rip. That's not the question. I don't know if he can hit the other moves. Like you said, with the Curry strip sack, he's pushing someone back into the quarterback and affecting where they can go. That's perfectly fine for me. If we get sacks from pressures that kind of way from other people, that's still being productive to me. So I was okay with Derek Barnett not getting a sack tonight. I want to see him work on those things a little bit more. Curry getting right around, because we talked about this on yesterday's show, the matchup with Laremy Tunsil possibly with Barnett, and Curry just schooled him on the one and got that strip sack. So, look, Curry played well, and it's not set in stone that he's not going to be the starter. Do you think the starter is Curry or Barnett?
I think rotation, and we've heard it, and it's kind of like a buzzword, like something you feel you're supposed to just say, you know, at press conferences, because that way you can justify moving people around. But I watch Stephen Means, and I'm a big Stephen Means guy, and even McAllister had a pretty good game as well, but I was particularly impressed by Means tonight. I watch these third and second string defenders. Chris Long was incredible tonight. How did I forget Chris Long? Chris Long might be the best run defending defensive end the Eagles have not named Brandon Graham. Given his veteran skills and his understanding, you know, the amount of time he's been around the league, his discipline, I would say that he and Brandon Graham is the best run defending DNs on this team. The way that these 5 to 6 players produce is really impressive and really encouraging. And so I truly believe that you're going to walk in to game day with a 2-deep that says, you know, Curry is starting and Barnett's second string and Long second string, and that's going to reflect nothing on the week-to-week snaps for these starters. And even throw Brandon Graham in there, you know what I mean? In the sense that if he's not, you know, producing a game or if he's injured, you really feel comfortable with the depth. This, and Mayock was talking about it a little bit on the broadcast, the defensive line, interior and edge depth for the Philadelphia Eagles is menacing. And when you have the conversation about, you know, the best front four in the league, I don't think if you take just starters, I don't think Eagles have a case for number one. But I think if you take depth, the Eagles have the case for the best front four in the NFL, a strong case.
I'm with you on that one. And we're going to get to some offensive players right after this. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just 2 taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. You can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually just use SeatGeek to buy tickets to Kendrick Lamar. Now, SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever, just like it was for me. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports to concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LONFL today. That's promo code LONFL today for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
Mike, can I read to you a wonderful musical tweet that I just found?
Go ahead.
Are you ready for this? Adam Beasley, who worked for Miami Herald's Miami Dolphins. He's a Miami Herald's Miami Dolphins reporter. The tweet says this, these words in this order. Maxwell said the TD was because of a busted coverage by him. Oh, what a sentence.
Really? Yeah. I am shocked. And I was actually, I was going to bring that up too, because the Dolphins secondary looked awful. And there was a lot of communication going on before the snap, and there are a lot of blown coverages, and that was one of them. That safety that was over top of Maxwell was not playing a deep zone, and Rashard Jones was playing deep safety shaded on the other side of the field, so Maxwell definitely should have kept going with that route. At least that's how I saw it. Maxwell just confirmed it, so Maxwell is a bum and will continue to be. Now, as we promised, we're going to talk about some offensive players, and we're going to get to wide receivers. Has Marcus Johnson, who had a touchdown tonight, locked up the 5th wide receiver spot?
Yeah, I feel comfortable saying so, and I don't feel comfortable saying that Patrick Robinson has slot corner locked up, though I think that's close. I don't feel comfortable saying, you know, the running back depth chart is set, because I don't think it is yet. But Marcus Johnson, I will say, I think has that fifth wide receiver spot locked up. He is athletic, and wow. I mean, and we've seen it before, but tonight particularly, the way he was moving across the field was very impressive. He and Mac Hollins, man, like, it's still concerning that you've got a fourth-round rookie and an undrafted rookie from last year who are, you know, going to provide the majority of your wide receiver depth. It'd be nice if you had something a little bit more consistent, predictable, tried and true and tested there. But their size, their athleticism, their catch radius, their ability to do work after the catch, I think really informs Wentz, his strength and his weaknesses, as well as this offense. You know, Mac Hollins on curl routes and crossing routes is so much fun to watch because, firstly, he's incredibly shorthanded, and then the yak that he picks up is impressive. And I feel similarly with Marcus Johnson. He runs nice routes. He's got solid hands. They're not Hollins level, but he's got good hands, a good radius, and then he does great work with yak. That touchdown he had, where he ran that little banjo route, right? Little whip around the back of the end zone. Oh, that was tasty. That was just 10 types of pretty. And then, you know, attention to detail, body control, hands on the sideline, just checking the boxes. I don't see how you don't protect him at least. Like, maybe he's not going to contribute that much this year, given, you know, your wide receiver situation, who knows. But you still have to protect him by getting him on that 53-man roster.
Yeah, that was poetic the way that you described the touchdown pass there by Marcus Johnson. I couldn't agree more. And we're going to move on to the offensive line like we do every show, really. Look, man, there was a third down with the first team where the Dolphins sent everybody and literally everyone got home. Mm-hmm. It was not a good performance by the first team O-line. The second team O-line, I was actually fairly impressed with. I thought Dylan Gordon played well. Chance Warmack had another key block on a touchdown for Corey Clement, which we will get into in a second. How did you feel about the overall performance of this offensive line? Do you feel better or worse or the same after tonight?
Second team better. I'll agree with you there. First team, the opposite of better. Yeah. That would be worse. all-out blitz about what you're speaking, it sticks out in my mind because the case for exoneration of Jason Kelce, you know, kind of that caveat, that response, that counterpunch every time people discuss him and his age and his frame is, oh, well, he helps with the calls of the line and he's a veteran presence, you know, to diagnose blitzes. And then they sent two blitzers up the A gap and both of them got through. Like, he didn't lay a hand. And he looked good in protection tonight. He did a better job, you know. He can still anchor for sure. He's still great on the hoof, and that's wonderful. But just that play stuck out to me because whenever we try to excuse Jason Kelce for, you know, being physically dominated by a larger defensive tackle, we talk about that ability. And then, I mean, he was just lost in the water. And I think it was Smallwood in pass protection who tried to peg one of them, and nothing was happening anywhere. The first team line didn't look as well. Didn't look, you know, improved. It didn't look. It's not where we want it to be. I think there has to be a conversation about the pass protection of the running backs as well, because Smallwood is not a good pass protector. Sproles and Pumphrey are not good pass protectors. LeGarrette Blount is probably your best pass protecting back. Corey Clement is a good pass protecting back in the sense that he's big, but he doesn't have any sort of form. He just hits a guy and gets in the way. That's, you know.
Yeah, look, I've watched a lot of running backs for Scouting Academy, and just because they're big doesn't mean anything. It's a will to block. It's a will to take on a certain body type, whether it be a cornerback or a defensive lineman, and it's technique with it too, man. You can be a bigger back, and you can lean into guys and have guys run around you and give up the inside track and do all types of things. So, yeah, size is definitely not the end-all, be-all for pass protecting. You got to have the want to.
As the game evolves, backs are becoming less involved in pass protection, more involved with scat concepts and, you know, why pass protect if I can just, you know, leak out here to the side, catch a swing pass, and pick up 3 yards. But either way, it's definitely going back to that stat for Wentz and the production he had when he had a clean pocket and the issues he had when the pocket was dirty. The biggest storyline for me coming into the season is the performance of an offensive line where pieces were moved under the assumption that this was to be one of the stronger units on the team. And through the preseason, which obviously is different than the regular season, but through the preseason, it has not been. And that's the biggest thing I'm watching going into week one for sure.
Yeah, and you definitely worry about that with defenses getting more exotic as you get to the regular season and not being able to make some of those easy pass protection calls. So last thing real quick before we go, man, Corey Clement had another touchdown. Pumphrey had a muff punt. and started to look better as the game went on, playing with the threes. What was your takeaway from their performance?
Right. See, obviously, I've been a pump stand, and I'm remaining a pump stand, because I don't think he looked better. I think he looked the same as he did. We just saw him have more opportunities with the football and have more space. For all of preseason, he's been maximizing the yardage that he's able to pick up on the runs that he's given. He's not trying to do too much. He's not trying to bust everything outside and make 12 people miss. You know, he's been taking what's given to him and producing as best he can. And you can tell he is frustrated because he's, you know, it's tough sledding on the inside. Obviously, the players are bigger, faster, and stronger. He had to put on more weight. You know, he's up to 176 now. And you can definitely see it's taking the edge off of his quickness and off of his suddenness. And that's difficult for him. But what we saw today was a Pumphrey that he can get the football in either a zone or a power blocking scheme. But they worked a lot more power for him today, which was good. And he can read blocks well. He can find daylight. And he can get vertical. I mean, there were multiple plays where you saw Pumphrey pick up 3 yards and folks were going to say, well, he should have made somebody miss. But if you break down the tape, you'll see that he's getting vertical and he's picking up the yards that's necessary. And when he gets up, he's frustrated and he's pissed. And you can tell, I think that they ran him as many times as they did because they're trying to build up his confidence. They're trying to get him to a place where, you know, he feels good about what he can do. He had a great run, a 12-yard pickup that was called back for a holding, I think it was, on Shelton Gibson. And the camera goes to him and he's just infuriated. You can tell he just wants to break something and it's just not coming to him. And he's discussed this in interviews where he just feels like he's getting in his own way and stuff. So they're trying to get the ball rolling for him. In the passing game today, he was particularly wonderful. He was particularly strong, picking up first downs, mismatches when he lines up in the slot. And I think that's more of a hallmark for what's to come. Clement looked great. I mean, Clement looks powerful between the tackles, and he's got decent vision, not so much in the second level, but he knows how to hit the hole and how to set up his blockers behind the line of scrimmage, and that's good. And he's definitely willing to catch the football and willing to pass protect as best he can, which is good. I don't think yet that Clement has stood out enough to win a roster spot. I think he's played well. I think he'll be the priority practice squad addition if he makes it through waivers, which will be tough. I don't think he's done enough to win a roster spot yet. I think I would still defer that to Pumphrey at this point. But there's definitely a conversation to be had. I just still think it's Pumphrey at the end of the day.
Yeah, and that was going to be exactly what I was going to ask you as far as the roster spots. So thank you for answering that before I had to. Either way, Eagles got the W tonight. We are going to be back on Monday. We might have a special guest for you. I'm not sure. I'm still pinning down the details. So eyeball emoji for that one. Come join us on Monday at 8 a.m. for our next show, which is going to be a Cowboys Get to Know a Rival edition. Find out why the Cowboys are in for a regression coming this Monday. And as always, keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.